Thanks, guys. Tim, alcoholic. Happy New Year. I saw we had cheesecake in there. I could not go into the kitchen. I had so much stuff. We're going to be doing steps 8 and 9 tonight. If you've not gotten an amends list from up here, I think it would be a great idea. Something you can also follow along with. I'm going to refer to it a couple times. But if you don't feel like getting up now, just grab one on the way out. And that's cool. And if you haven't been here before, all those guys that raised their hands as being here first time or whatever, you should take one of everything. But these three in front of me are repeats. So these are fourth step sheets. This is the 9th step amends list. Okay, so we're on page 76. And we are in the middle of the page. Second paragraph. And here we go. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Ann Smith, Dr. Bob's wife, was famous for saying this. This is a biblical quote. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. So we're good, right? We've got the 8th step done, right? Almost. Here's the little difference is, we have a list of all persons we have harmed. There's our list. All we had to do was take them off of the 4th step sheets. And we needed to decide if we're willing to now actually make the amends. So the way this is set up, you see the person's name or institution. You may owe it to the post office. I don't know. You may have firebombed them one day or something. You owe an amend, so you could put post office there. You'd have that listed, and then next to it, you'd put some sort of indication that I'm good with this one. I'm willing. You're well on your way when you're willing. Somebody shows me their sheet. I go right down that column, and I look for where there's no check. That's where the problem is. If you're willing to make the amends, you're pretty good. If you say, I'm not contacting that person, I'm going to focus on that like a pit bull. You have to become willing to make the amends. Does it mean you do it next Tuesday? Probably not. We're going to do easy ones first and work our way up to the hard ones. But if there's a column here that remains unchecked, unwilling, that's a problem. That will get you drunk quicker than anything. So it's only about becoming willing. We can discuss when and what is going to be done later. So then, once you've completed that, now if you're at the point where you're not willing, what would we do about it? Pray like the Dickens. Pray for the willingness to be able to make the amends at some point. Okay? We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. So we did that in 4. We did that in 5. We've made our 8th step list, right? We've made our 8th step list. And now, now, not a month from now, now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. So now we're at step 9. Once the list is done, we're being instructed. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will. Remember, that's why our life is unmanageable, because we're living on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. So that's the concept of we're going to pray about it. We're going to pray to get the willingness. But if somebody says, well, where is step 9 in the book? You just read it. Here it is. You can turn this into a question. We're going to do it later on. But you would turn into a question from where I started there. Now we go out all the way down to run the show ourselves. We're going to turn that into a question. And that is asking if somebody is going to do 9. I want commitment that you're going to do 9. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning in italics now, we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. So what it's saying is that the willingness coupled with the action is the thing that's going to keep us sober. That's the any lengths. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident, meaning hesitant. We may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. What does that imply? That sometimes amends require multiple approaches, right? Maybe you start out with some low-level stuff and you kick it up a notch and you kick it up a notch, right? Or you reprove yourself, like if you're going to make a payment plan, each time you make the payment that you've agreed to, right? That's another approach. That's another ticking away at the amends. We might prejudice them, meaning about a spiritual concept right from the very beginning. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. So sobriety is not an end in itself. What's the end in itself? Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and to the people about us. That's why we're sober. Individual sobriety lays the foundation. After that, that is not enough. We need to adapt ourselves to be of maximum service to God and to people about us. That is all about step 12. The purpose of the first 11 steps is to do 12. Everything else is moot. If you're not doing 12, you're not doing it. And you may get away with it for years. We see this all the time. What happens when you go to an anniversary meeting? Somebody celebrates 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 8, 9, 11. Next guy that celebrates got 26. All the people in the middle, they may not be drinking, but they're not here. So they're not performing step 12. Right? They may be doing some version of it, but they're not helping the alcoholic just walked in the door just now. They may be doing the second part, practice these principles in our affair. They may be the most spiritual people in the whole world. They're at Stop and Shop. That's terrific. But they're not doing the first part. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? And what's a bore is somebody who, tedious repetition, a very dull sort of conversation. We don't want that, right? We're saying do not go down that road. We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. That's the point. It's not about an agenda. It's not about smacking them in the head with the big book. If that's going to work, I say that that's good. But if it's counterproductive, give it up. Because what we're trying to do is carry a beneficial message. And you got to get through to the audience, right? If your audience is different, somebody said to me, well, what kind of sponsor are you? I don't know. I'm different to every one of them, right? I adapt myself to what I think they need. Some need to be pushed. Some need to be you hold back a little bit. You know, some need to be coddled. You got to figure it out. It's an intuitive thing. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. In other words, we're going to them and they're not going to be interested in talking about your spiritual awakening. They want to know where their money is, right? Or the apology. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. So going to them and talking about all this great information you have in steps 1, 2, and 3 aren't nearly as important as the work we're doing in 4 through 12. This is a demonstration of goodwill, right? I went through the whole process. I needed to do 4 to go to 5, to do 6 and 7, to give me the list on 8, for me to show up and see the guy on 9. That's the demonstration of goodwill. Chit-chat about the spiritual thing in 1, 2, and 3. Save that until after you cut the deal where you're going to make the payment $100 a week until you're paid off. Save that. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated, past tense. It does not say hate, because how do we know it's past tense? You got rid of the hate in 4. You had a resentment against the person, and you figured out what your part in it is, and it worked magic on you. And if it didn't, you're doing 6 and 7. You're praying. You're asking God to help you through that. You know, I still hate him. I still hate him. Terrific. You're supposed to be praying about it. Yeah, but I still hate him. Terrific. Pray more. So it's hated. Past tense. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with the person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. Beneficial in what sense? Better to stay sober with. Remaining hating that person will only get us drunk. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over our drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. So if you have a resentment, it says that what you're supposed to do is go to the person and say, listen, I'm trying to clear away my side of the street. Any ill feelings I've had about you in the past, I'm letting it go. Bygones be got, bygones. Love you, brother. Done. There's your beautiful job. You just did a beautiful job. If they're still holding on to something, that's their problem. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. Right? So nothing will be accomplished until we do this. Holding resentments is the number one offender to get us drunk. Resentments equal bad. Drunk. His faults are not discussed. Now that sometimes can, you know, you can read that a couple of ways. If he brings them up and wants to chit-chat about them, that's terrific. But we don't initiate. We're there about our part in the game. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. That's 90% in case nobody knew that, right? 90% of the time, we're saying from personal experience, the first 100 are saying the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault. So feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter. However, if someone does throw us out of his office, we have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. Now, do we have to go back to this person to make another amends? Nope, done. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Okay, so now we're going to take a little stab at the difference between an amend and an apology. So watch this. Arranging the best deal we can. That's an amend, assuming you follow through with it. So you owe money, you're going to pay $30 a week, That is arranging the best deal we can. That's an amend, assuming you follow through. We let these people know we are sorry. That's an apology. Two different things. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. So by not doing this, the book is threatening us. You will drink. It may not be Tuesday. It may be 9 years from now. But you will drink. Because you actually have not gone all in. You did not surrender to the recipe. This is the recipe of a particular... This is a formula. You got to do the whole formula to the best of your ability. Perhaps we have committed a criminal offense which might land us in jail if it were known to the authorities. We may be short in our accounts and unable to make good. We have already admitted this in confidence to another person, meaning the fifth step. But we are sure we would be imprisoned or lose our job if it were known. Maybe it's only a petty offense, such as padding the expense account. Most of us have done that sort of thing. Maybe we are divorced and have remarried, but haven't kept up the alimony to number one. She is indignant about it and has a warrant out for our arrest. That's a common form of trouble too. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, although these amends, reparations is an amend, repair, see the root word in there? Although these reparations can take innumerable forms, there are some good general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. So it's the spiritual experience which is what gets us sober, and it's the constant action within 12 that keeps us sober. So the purpose of doing all this work up through 9 is to generate a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening, right? Of the educational variety. We're gonna grow into it. It might not be a white light thing, but the purpose of what we're doing is to have that experience because that's what's going to keep us sober. Let's see the rest of the sentence. I underline the rest of the sentence. Here is the 9th step prayer. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. So you're going to go off and you're going to do your amends, and you're fearful 15 minutes before you knock on the door to go into the office. You say this prayer. This is the 9th step prayer. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. Willingness is key. It did not say, but you must do it. It said, let's deal with first things first. You must be willing. If you're unwilling, we got a serious problem. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything. Usually, however, other people are involved. Therefore, we are not to be the hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the alcoholic pit. A man we know had remarried. Because of resentment, number one offender, and drinking, he had not paid alimony to his first wife. She was furious. She went to court and got an order for his arrest. He had commenced our way of life, meaning he's doing the steps, and secured a position, got a job, and was getting his head above water. He was sober. It would have been impressive heroics if he had walked up to the judge and said, "Here I am." We thought he ought to be willing to do that, if necessary. But if he were in jail, he could provide nothing for either family. And that's also why these ideas of amends and what you're going to do and when you're going to do it, it's important to run it by a sponsor, a sober network, potentially an attorney, right? Maybe a psychologist. These things should be discussed. You don't just run off half-cocked, right? We suggested he write his wife excuse me, we suggested he write his first wife admitting his faults and asking for forgiveness, right? So that's an apology, asking for forgiveness. He did, and also sent a small amount of money. That's an amends. He asked for forgiveness, apology, and also sent a small amount of money. Assuming he keeps going with the small amount of money, he's doing his ninth step. If he made the apology and didn't send the money, but could have, he did not do a ninth step. He told her what he would try to do in the future. He said he was perfectly willing to go to jail if she insisted. Of course she did not. And the whole situation has long since been adjusted. So this is the little advice that I've gotten on this sheet. So on the sheet is this. Before taking drastic action, which might implicate other people, we secure their consent. If we have obtained permission, have consulted with others, asked God to help, and the drastic step is indicated, we must not shrink. That's a rule. That's not a suggestion. That's a rule. Particularly since it could affect somebody else. This brings to mind a story about one of our friends. This is not an AA story. This is an Oxford group story. While drinking, he accepted a sum of money from a bitterly hated business rival, giving him no receipt for it. He subsequently denied having received the money and used the incident as a basis for discrediting the man. He thus used his own wrongdoing as a means of destroying the reputation of another. In fact, his rival was ruined. He felt that he had done a wrong he could not possibly make right. If he opened that old affair, he was afraid it would destroy the reputation of his partner, disgrace his family, and take away his means of livelihood. What right had he to involve those dependent upon him? How could he possibly make a public statement exonerating his rival? After consulting with his wife and partner, I'll add in and sponsor, he came to the conclusion that it was better to take those risks than to stand before his creator guilty of such ruinous slander. He saw that he had to place the outcome in God's hands, or he would soon start drinking again, and all would be lost anyhow. He attended church for the first time in many years. After the sermon, he quietly got up and made an explanation. His action met widespread approval, and today he is one of the most trusted citizens of his town. This all happened years ago. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand. But what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and, God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take. Our design for living is not a one-way street. It is as good for the wife as for the husband. If we can forget, so can she. It is better, however, that one does not needlessly name a person upon whom she can vent jealousy. Perhaps there are some cases where the utmost frankness is demanded. No outsider can appraise such an intimate situation. It may be that both will decide that the weight of good sense and loving kindness is to let bygones be bygones. Each might pray about it, having the other one's happiness uppermost in mind. Let me just read that again. I think that's really important. Each might pray about it, having the other one's happiness uppermost in mind. Keep it always in sight that we are dealing with that most terrible human emotion, jealousy. Good generalship may decide that the problem be attacked on the flank rather than risk a face-to-face combat. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober. I think that's a good example of a living amends. Staying sober would be a living amends. For there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good. That's an amends. He is a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted. Where have we seen this one before? Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. It does not say drinking, right? Because the exact nature of our ruin is selfish, self-centered, right? The booze is a symptom of living a self-will life. That's an unmanageable life. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" So you see the point there. The house is gone. And he's talking about the wind has stopped. Yeah, well, now we got a house we have to rebuild. So there is problems here, Ma. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. So reconstruction is amending destruction. We have to rebuild. It's action, it's verb, it's doing stuff. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation, that's step 11, right, that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Those are all assets. And you could turn that a little bit into a prayer also. You could say, God, please show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it, in italics. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. That's willingness. Everybody saw that. That's important. As long as you're willing, if an amends can't be made, you're good. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. So the big book does say, as a suggestion, that that is an option. Of course, that's probably going to be more in the line of the apology rather than the amend. But in the amend, if it stated what you were going to do to fix the problem and then you followed through with it, good. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be, all assets now, we should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone.
What's so, servile mean?
Say again?
Servile? What does that mean?
Servant is the root word. You're being a slave to them. The promises on 83, 84, here they are. If we are painstaking, how many promises are there? 12, of course, not by mistake, right? If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going halfway through what? Ninth step, not six. There's 12 steps, halfway through nine. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. Wow. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. I'm going to stop there tonight.